Father Chris Metropoulos speaks with Dr. Philip Mamalakis of Holy Cross Greek Orthodox Seminary about his new book and seminar entitled Journey of Marriage.
I think a lot of couples getting married today see marriage as sort of the finish line to the race. But you're saying that the race doesn't end there. Tell us how marriage is a journey, Philip.
Well, you know, people get married for all sorts of reasons. And we begin marriage usually imagining what marriage will be like and imagining the person we're going to be married to. Mm-hmm. But then there's something that happens in this process, and in a lot of ways, it's like a journey. There's a lot of discovery that happens. You start learning more about yourself. You start learning more about your spouse. You start, you know, usually people get married because they're so similar. Well, you start discovering differences, you know, and so this process of, well, now what do we do? And, you know, life gets in, starts, you know, raising its head, and you have to balance a budget together. You have to raise kids together. So it's a process of discovery and a process of learning. And so it has that quality of movement and growth. It's, you know, like the spiritual life. So rather than be like a state, like the goal is to get married, and we see this, people get married and then they stop paying attention like they did when they were dating. They stop, you know, connecting and being curious. So rather than being a state we enter to, it really seems to be more reflective of what's happening is to really consider it like a road trip, like a journey together over a lifetime.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the program that you and Father Charles Ioannidis call the Journey of Marriage.
Well, we know that one of the biggest decisions people make in life is the person they're going to marry. And it's a time when young people will return to the church to get married. We know that most people on their wedding day want to live happily ever after. But sadly, in our culture, we see that for nearly half of them, they don't quite make it. So Father Charles and I looked at this phenomenon, and we said, how can we connect couples more to the life of the church and to the priest who's going to marry them right from the start? How can we help them prepare for this journey of marriage? And the research is pretty clear. Couples who prepare for marriage do better on the journey of marriage. Hmm. In fact, even non-Christian programs. So Father Charles and I looked at what was out there, and there's some good things out there in different faith traditions and even in non-Christian settings, but we didn't see anything that really captured how the Orthodox understand marriage and then incorporated the best research into marriage and marriage preparation. So we thought we developed this three-part program called The Journey of Marriage, where the first part is you meet with your priest, who will be officiating. The second part is you attend a one-day seminar led by possibly a lay facilitator that walks you through the journey of marriage, all the different aspects of the journey of marriage. And then the third part is you return to your parish priest, now having kind of been introduced to what marriage is all about, and, you know, we kind of raise some questions for couples to think about and kind of lay out what it means to prepare. And you bring that to the priest who's officiating, and you continue on with discussions about, all right, now what do we need to do as a couple mm-hmm. to prepare? Because we thought the answer to, you know, it's difficult to be married, and the answer is let's figure out a way to connect couples to their parish priest. Because really, if we think about how the Greek Orthodox Church has done marriage preparation, you know, it's a little bit hit and miss. Some priests who have the time and the skills and the training will do some good marriage prep, but in many cases, the priest is too overwhelmed, there's too much happening, and we thought, how can we create something that'll raise up the marriage preparation across the archdiocese, big urban areas and rural parishes, that'll really help couples prepare?
Well, with the statistics going as they're going, and there's no reason to hide behind the finger, as they say in Greek, usually krivomaste piso apto dactylo, you know, would say, well, you know, everything is great and marriages are going up and divorces are going down, but that's not the truth. We know that the marriages in the church are going down, the divorces are going up, the deaths are up, and the baptisms are down. So we have a problem. And I think part of the problem is we're not looking at what God's purpose is for marriage. So let's talk about that first, because I think you can agree with me, Philip, that a life without purpose is a life that's lost. There needs to be purpose there. It needs to be an understanding, especially, I think, from the side of our Creator, that is God.
Absolutely. If you can imagine, you know, you're going to build a building, you're going to follow the plans of the architect.
Right.
You're not going to just do it on your own. And really, marriage is God's design, and he's the architect. And so through the church, he reveals to us his purpose and essentially how marriages thrive. Because what's interesting is most couples want to live happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's actually that's God's goal for us too, that our marriages, we're not just enduring our marriages, but that we actually live happily ever after. But for many of us, we enter marriage thinking, I'm going to get all my needs met and all my desires met, and I need to change my spouse just in a few little ways. Well, in fact, God's plan for marriage is a little bit different. He invites us to figure out how do you love your spouse as you discover the faults and allow God to change you just a little bit. Because for us, God's purpose of marriage is that we become transformed in love. St. Gregory Nazianzus writes that marriage is the key that opens the door to discover perfect love.
Hmm.
That marriage is really a journey of being transformed in love. And we all are familiar with the reading at the wedding of Ephesians, that husbands love your wives just as Christ loves the church and gave his life up for us. Well, most people think, of course I love my spouse. Well, what God invites us to do is, now what does it mean to love your spouse with Christ-like love? What does it mean to give your life up for someone? So we see in marriage, we see the things that destroy marriage, the poisons of marriage, like selfishness and pride. Well, these come into play as a young man and woman come together. And really God's plan for marriage and his purpose is that I, as Philip, become healed of my selfishness and pride as I learn to love my wife. And so his plan is that I become holy. I become perfected in his love through the daily, you know, struggles of raising a family and running a home.
That's pretty easy, though, isn't it, Philip?
You know, I'll tell you when it's easy. When I first met my wife, boy, what is it
that
easy.
Was easy then, wasn't it?
I paid attention to her.
Right.
I was, you know, interested. I
Me
was
too.
Patient. I was considerate. But then something happens.
This time
when we start living with someone, we realize, boy, you know, it's easy to love someone who's just like you are, who likes to get up when you like to get up, likes the home as organized as you do, right, likes to spend money the way you do, likes to go places at the same time, has the same interests. We realize marriage is this really an invitation to love someone who thinks differently, who feels differently, who likes things a different way. It pulls us out of ourselves.
Well,
this is God's love.
Let's talk about that disillusionment a little bit, because that happens in the first few years of marriage to many couples, a realization that life doesn't become perfect and easy just because I'm married, and that the person I've chosen has more flaws than I realized in the beginning, and maybe I don't feel like they were honest about the flaws with me. So how do we handle discovering our spouse's so-called brokenness?
That's right. It's a discovery. That people get married for all sorts of reasons, and then, and usually we do it because we feel like we call it love. We have strong feelings of affection and attraction. And then what happens when we actually live with someone and journey with them, it can become really, you can become disillusioned when you realize that those feelings of affection actually die. Because those are not really what it takes to have a successful marriage. So when you discover the faults and you realize, you know, that my wife is different, and that it actually is hard to be patient. And suddenly it feels like, and this happens to everyone, I'm doing all the sacrificing in this relationship, and I'm not getting what I wanted out of it. And that type of disillusionment, if we weren't expecting it, leads couples into my office to say, I'm no longer in love with my wife. I think I need to divorce. To which I say, you know, you no longer have those feelings of affection. But really, when those feelings stop, that's really where love begins. Because really, love is about patience, kindness, gentleness. And so as we discover the faults in our spouse, this is really an invitation to learn, how do I love someone with these faults? And they say, well, I didn't know about these faults when I married her. That's right. That marriage is actually a journey of discovering these faults, not only in your spouse, but in yourself. But though that's not what breaks up marriages. Every marriage has these things. What breaks up marriages is when couples refuse to learn how to love. How do I love this person with these faults? How do we learn how to work together with our weaknesses in Christ? How do we both learn together how to be patient, how to be kind, how to be gentle. It's about learning. It's not what we feel like. And we tell this to our kids. We teach our kids, you know, you don't hit. Even if you feel like hitting, mm-hmm. you don't hit.
Okay.
Because we see that God's love really demands that type of self-denial, that type of, it's not about me getting what I want. It's about me learning how to love this person as I discover.
One of the amazing things that I have the privilege to do is to oversee, if you will, or I don't want to call it celebrate because it's not celebrate, but it's officiate. That's the word. One of the greatest things that I have the privilege to officiate at is a funeral. And last week I had a couple who had been married for 57 years, and I usually ask the family to write a biography for me so that I can carve that into an appropriate eulogy for the person. So they wrote me the eulogy that this man had been on life support for about a month and he passed away. But they wrote the story about how he met his wife. The father of the bride went to his daughter the night before the wedding and showed a picture to the daughter and said, "This is your husband. You will marry him tomorrow." They married. They stayed together 57 years. And you would think that they had been dating for years before. The love, the respect that they had was amazing. And one of the keys that the wife told me was, "You know, Father, he allowed me to see his faults as well as identify my own." And that was an amazing thing. That sort of cracked the whole relationship open. And they stayed together because sometimes we don't want to show our brokenness. We don't want our spouse to know our weak points because we say, well, they'll use them to get back at us. Could you address that a bit?
Absolutely. You know, it's really interesting because I think what each one of us desires as a human being is to be fully known and fully loved. But it involves a certain amount of vulnerability. If I'm going to really allow myself to be known, that means, you know, it's easy to allow my gifts and my strengths to be seen, but I might be ashamed and I might be scared of letting my brokenness be seen because I'm afraid of being criticized or being attacked. And so, but what really facilitates intimacy in marriage is vulnerability. So it's specifically this journey of learning to love each other and feeling safe enough to allow our brokenness to be known. But many men will think, well, my wife wants me to be strong and always have the right answer, which is not true. As guys, sometimes we have no idea what to do and we're scared. You know, and women will carry this idea about what they think the husband wants. So really the challenge of marriage is to do exactly what that woman and that man did, mm-hmm. is to create in your relationship almost the freedom to just be who we are, which is we're broken and we're healing. And that to recognize that when God loves us, when we experience love in our brokenness, that is actually what's healing. That our brokenness doesn't destroy marriage. It just becomes the place where my wife and I meet, just in love. And so really, it's a journey of learning, not to judge each other, because we all, you know, many people come into marriage thinking, I'm going to tell you all your faults so you can change. As if the Holy Spirit has enlightened me to see all my spouse's faults.
Right, right. That'll get you far. That'll get you real far.
But in fact, you do have a front row seat to the faults of your spouse.
Mm.
But it's an invitation. Am I going to judge?
Right.
Or am I going to love? And how am I going to love? And then it becomes a beautiful journey of intimacy and connection. And really, Father, such that my wife is the only one who knows all my faults. Mm-hmm. It's a real point of intimacy and connection. We struggle together not to act out on them. We struggle to forgive each other. But it becomes a real powerful place of intimacy that someone really knows me, not knows me as perfect, but knows me as imperfect and still loves me.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. I mean, why is it important for couples to talk through these marital issues before they get married? Why not just wait like that couple I just referred to? Why don't just wait and let it fly? And let the chips fall where they're going to fall.
You know, 57 years ago, an 18-year-old girl didn't have a lot of choice.
Mm.
Right? And she also was probably not raised with her own room, her own car, her own iPad, used to getting what she wanted. So there's a lot of cultural things that used to be around that aren't. So what happens now is we imagine, I want to be with someone. I love being with this person. I just imagine marriage is, I get to be with him all the time. Well, then you move in together and you realize, what if she doesn't want to have kids right away? And you were hoping to have kids. And that's really important to you. What if he doesn't want to baptize the kids in the church? And that's really a non-negotiable thing for you. There's certain issues that are so important that if you discover them after you're married, it really can create a real conflict and a real division. So it's these types of major issues that couples do best when they sit beforehand. You know, I really like to be with you, and what role do you want the church to play in your marriage? Or how do you want to handle finances? Or what role do you want your family to play in our lives? Talking about these major issues helps you discern that although I like this person, is this really the person who's best for me to go on this long journey? Because remember, the criterion for selecting someone isn't that you really like them. It has to be something a lot more deep than that. Is this person on the same page as I am with these major issues?
You know, I've heard you speak at numerous times about these issues, and I really enjoy when you speak, and I learn a great deal. But there's one story that's just tremendous, and you say that a man comes in and tells you during a therapy session that they would take a bullet for their wife, to which you reply, so why don't you take out the garbage when she asks you to? I mean, it's hilarious, but it's true. It's so easy to say we'll make a giant, you know, one-time sacrifice, but we're not really willing on many occasions to do more. Could you address that?
You know, I think it's easier for me to imagine how much I'd sacrifice for my wife than it is to really get up off the couch when I'm in the middle of a football game. That's hard to do. And so really, this, what does it mean to love someone? It's we're willing to do the hard thing for them. It's not really about what we imagine. And sure, we can imagine, you know, rescuing her from a fiery building. But really, that's not what happens in marriage. The daily self-denial or the daily dying to your own will in marriage is really the simple things. Everything from putting the toothpaste lid back on the toothpaste, or picking up your shoes, or not dumping your coat right in the middle of the living room. You know, just the small things that fill up our day that are small acts of sacrifice simply because you know this is important to my spouse. And that really becomes, in a sense, where we are transformed. And it's really about, do I love my spouse more than I love myself and getting my way? And it's these areas that on one hand, can really build intimacy, that a couple who's spending time just paying attention to each other and sacrificing these little things simply because it's important to the other person actually nurture a deep type of intimacy. And conversely, the couples who miss those little things, don't recognize how powerful they are, who don't pay attention to each other in the small things, really end up drifting apart and feeling disconnected. And I think it's beautiful because we see that God is working in me as I get up and take out the trash just because it needs to be taken out. Mm-hmm. Not because I want to, but because it's an act of love. And so suddenly all the mundane parts of running a household become really powerfully significant in me growing in love, in me expressing love, and in my wife and I really working together and connecting.
You've been married for how many years now, Philip?
I'm approaching 21 years, 20 and a half years.
Wow. Well, let's ask you one final question. What are one or two pieces of knowledge that you've picked up over these years from your own journey in marriage?
You know, Father, I'm a marriage and family therapist. I help couples when they're stuck. I do marriage preparation. I teach on marriage. Yet, my wife and I, when we get stuck, we go talk to someone. That's the first thing I've learned, is you can never be too smart to need a third person in your marriage. That God's design for marriage is that Christ is in between my wife and I. And if you remember how we get married, how does the wedding journey start? You know, we all know it's the priest who holds the two hands of the bride and groom together and processes three times around the table. That's the beginning of that journey. And with the gospel in his hand, that is, you see the image of a healthy marriage. It starts with Christ, the gospel, and the priest in between. So the one thing I've learned is there's no shame in going to talk to someone. In fact, if you want to grow together, go talk to someone. Marriages are not designed to be just between two people. So people, when my wife and I go talk to someone, they'll even say, well, you're a therapist. How come you don't? I said, I know. But that's like being a dentist. Just because a dentist knows all about teeth decay doesn't mean he has to stop brushing. I know all about what can happen in marriage. That's why we go talk to someone. And it's been really powerful. And but you know, I say that because there's sometimes we think if I have to go talk to someone, that means we failed in our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not the case. It's the opposite. It means actually I have to put my pride aside. I have to humble myself. Right, and just allow someone to guide it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the powerful. And then have a date night. Try and have a date night. Try and go on a retreat once a year. You know, these types of things I've realized are what we do all the time. And I feel like a newlywed. And I'm surprised by that. I thought after 20 years, you know, we'd be in some routine, and we, you know, I'm not learning anymore. We figured everything out. We're still learning, and it's that ongoing learning that really keeps this relationship kind of fresh, like newlyweds, for 20 years and hopefully 30 years and 40 years.
Philip, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks so much for your time.
Father Chris, thank you so much. It was great to talk.
You've been listening to Orthodox Family and Faith. This has been a production of the Orthodox Christian Network.